First of all, what's it like being in Edinburgh during the Fringe? Is this your first time in Edinburgh?
No, it's my first time at the Fringe since 30 years ago. I was in a production of Wojciech with Deborah Warner. It was her first ever production. And she got a group of drama students from Central and two of us from RADA. We're all mates, and we all came up to the Epworth Hall in Nicholson Square. We did two shows a day. We sold out. It was absolutely fantastic. Great production. And it was a profit-sharing thing, and on the last day we had all our takings nicked. So we returned. We didn't even have our return train tickets. So we all had to, not only had we, you know, paid for our existence in Edinburgh for 3.5-4 weeks, we then returned home with no money and had to pay for our train tickets home. So happy memories. I mean, fantastic. It was a lovely group of people.
What can you tell me about Just Like That? Tell me about the show first and how you came to be in it.
Well, I was originally...
As we listen to the drummer.
Yeah,
in the background.
It'll be a nice little accompaniment. Yeah. I'll try and do it in time. I can't remember. Well, it was 2001, because it was actually September the 11th, 2001, the day the planes went into the Twin Towers. I went to Scarborough to audition for Alan Ayckbourne. I prepared the Margate speech, which is one of Tommy's sort of famous set pieces, fully prepared to do this for Alan Ayckbourne. He said, no, I don't want to see you play the act. Anyone can do that. And I sort of looked at him askance. He said, I want you to read a bit from the dressing room, which is obviously, you know, that's something that an actor and a director would work out in rehearsal. It wasn't something you'd get a clear idea of the real Tommy. It didn't work out between Alan Ayckbourne and myself, and indeed Alan left the project, left me high and dry, and then Simon Callow came in to direct it and got Jerome Flynn to play it, and he was fantastic. He did a major tour and he was very good. And then about 3 years ago, about 3 years ago, I was sitting there very unemployed, and Patrick Reichardt, who produced it, is a mate of mine. I just wrote to him and said, listen, mate, if you're not doing anything with Tommy, you know, it's my turn. Can I, you know, at least can I have the rights and can I go off and do it? And he said, we were talking about it yesterday. Let's do it. And I said, well, hold on a minute. Let me prove to you I can do it first. He said, all right, 2 weeks today, come in, do something for me, and I'll either hug you and we'll go to the pub and say, yes, you're doing it, or I'll hug you and we'll go to the pub and I'll say, no, you're not doing it. Either way, you know, we'll hug and go to the pub. So I prepared as much as I could and went in and obviously impressed him enough to think that we could make a go of it. And that was it. And we did a lovely tour last year for 6 months. Hard, because it was, you know, a night here, two nights there, one night there, three nights there, and all over the country, you know. One day you're in Norwich, and then you have to drive to Hereford and do the show there that night, and then the next morning drive to Swansea, and you know. So I mean, it was a massive undertaking, but thoroughly enjoyable. Looking back on it, you know, the experience of playing all those different sized theatres, from something like the Bristol Hippodrome, 2,500 to Banbury Arts Centre, you know, 150 people. So it was a fantastic experience, our ambition was to try and get it into London last Christmas, but then I got Game of Thrones, a series for HBO, so I couldn't do that. And then we remounted it for here for Edinburgh, and the hope to sort of take it on again. We'd love to go to Australia with it and things like that, you know, because I think there'd be a good market there, or on the old cruise ships, or, you know, anyway, something like that. I think there'll be a market for Tommy for, you know, as long as people remember him, because it's funny stuff, it's inoffensive, it's you know, it's anarchic, it's, you know, it's a wonderful mixture of magic, of patter, of movement, of bizarre sort of movement. I think most comedians have sort of one or two of those elements, but Tommy had all these magical elements all together, and it was it made him intoxicating, I think, in the best sense of the word, not in Tommy's sense of the word, intoxicating. But.
And did you have to do much research, or did you do much research into his life?
Into his life, obviously I read the books, and I've spoken to a lot of people who knew him. People in the business who knew him only have affectionate memories of him, because as we do with actors and actresses who you've worked with, you know, when they die, you sort of can't remember their private life so much. You remember their professional, their hits and their misses and the famous things they said or did or their bad behaviour or things like that. You remember less about their family details and the minutiae of their life. So I spent a long time obviously studying the tapes, the CDs, the DVDs, the videos, all that, you know, I mean, I watched, you know, for 3 months solidly before rehearsals began. I was working, you know, 40 hours a week on Tommy. And then again this year before we started this, I did 6 weeks prep, you know, just to refresh it all in my mind. Because it's, you know, you want to please the aficionados, but you also, you know, want to, you know, get as much of Tommy up there on stage as you possibly can. It's never going to be Tommy, obviously, because no one ever is going to have that unique personality or that charisma ever again. But you've got to just try get as much of him up there as possible. So the more preparation you do, the better chance you've got of pulling that off. And I think last year I was so concerned with, you know, Tommy put his left hand on the thing at that point, then looked at the audience left, then right, then back again, then put it. This year I've eased off slightly on that, on the actual technical things, and tried to make it a more, you know, fully rounded evening for the audience, as opposed to just playing it for the aficionados. So, you know, there's a bit more of, I suppose, there's a bit more of me playing with Tommy this year, playing with what Tommy might have done on one evening, as opposed to what he actually did in every video, you know. So, and that's been very enjoyable, sort of developing that, because you feel actually you're under his skin a bit more.
I mean, before I saw it, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I mean, we've had in recent years BBC Four doing a lot of this kind of drama. Well, drama series about
Jackson and Sid James.
That's
all
right,
and Steptoe and Son.
And at the start of this, there is a, you do touch on, without spoiling anything, but you sort of touch on the darker side. Oh, well, maybe not the darker side, but the reality then behind the act.
Yeah.
And you don't dwell on that too much. But I just wondered: did you want to? Was there a thought of making it into like a BBC Four drama?
I think it's been muted, and you know, I don't know who'd write it if they did. Cause it's obviously got to be someone very close to him, and someone with a lot of knowledge. The thing about it is, his private life was such a shambles. You know, he was married to Dove for all those years, and you know, very happily married for a long time until they both drank as much as each other, and they both threw furniture at each other, and they both gave, you know, they both. There was no holds barred in their relationship, but it was a boisterous household, let's put it that way. And at the same time, for the last 17, 18 years of his life, so he died when he was 63, so from the age of 45 onwards, he was having the affair with Mary, his stage manager, which, you know, was literally 4, 5, 6 days a week. And he'd go home to Dove for maybe 1 or 2 days a week. To lead that sort of double life, that's what I think, you know, that's what, how I feel, that led to his just amazing drinking, was how on earth he dealt with all that guilt. And no doubt about it, there was guilt. He was absolutely petrified that he'd be found out, because at the time he was the... You know, he was the country's sort of leading family entertainer, you know, and a whiff of any scandal like that would have ended his career. In those days, it would have just terminated his career full stop there and then. He would have never got another contract on television. He may have still had some club work and stuff like that, but people would have shunned him, such was in the 60s and 70s and... especially, you know, things maybe broadened out in the 80s and 90s, but it was a very, very different country then. You know, so he was dealing with that guilt. He was also a very fit man when he was younger. He was a boxer when he was in the Horse Guards, so he had this incredible residual fitness from being in the army, and he just drank that away. So he had an amazing capacity for drink, you know, when he was fit, but then he still carried on drinking that much when he wasn't fit, and it just... led to all sorts of illnesses, phlebitis and heart problems, kidney problems and leg problems, ulcers and you know, he was a shambles physically and emotionally for the latter part of his life. He was only 63 when he died, and I reckon he peaked really in the late 60s, early 70s, and then it went downhill very rapidly. And you look at the later footage of him, he was a very sad man. The colour had all gone from his eyes, you know, his bright blue eyes were then really grey and really, really, really sad, shambling around. His timing was still there because that was ingrained. All his routines were absolutely ingrained, but the way he moved, and he was a shambles really. But, you know, he was one of the world's greatest entertainers.
Hugely successful, yeah.
Highest paid, entertainer on television for a long while. Only Morecambe Wise got more money than him, but they had to split it two ways. So for a long time, he was, you know, he was king of the hill.
You've got the look down, certainly, and the, everything, the mannerisms.
Yeah.
How long did that take to...
You know, I made distinct notes about what his feet do, what his legs do, what his torso does, what his arms do, what his face does, what his eyebrows do, you know, and then there's how many different types of laugh has he got, you know, and I graded them in seven different types of laughs that he does during his act, you know, from, you know, ha-ha to aha, you know, one to seven, you know. And I sort of literally marked them in the routines of where they come and, you know, what strength they were. And then it's, vocal patterns. You know, people forget that he was spent a large part of his growing up in Exeter. That's why he's got a West Country burr. And, you know, so there was one review last year on the tour saying, how dare climb out of a West Country burr into Tommy Cooper? He's got a fucking West Country burr in his accent. You know, he was born in Wales, moved from there when he was 18 months old, lived in Exeter till he was 15 or something like that. He did have a West Country burr, and then Chiswick for the rest of his life, so there's bits of London in there. And so, I mean, you know, putting the voice together was a fantastic sort of jigsaw of how strong to go with certain vowel sounds and, you know, girls and things like that, you know, to... you know, how strong to play it, and so all those elements, trying to link the physical with the vocal, and then matching it to the tapes and the DVDs. I mean, it was like a wonderful jigsaw that you get to very rarely work on as an actor. You know, most of the time you're just playing yourself or a version of yourself. You know, and being 6 foot five and a half, that's mainly either punching people or being punched. You know, so. You know, it's a hell of a thing. It's a hell of a challenge, and to have a go at it and to throw your hat in the ring, say, "All right, well, yeah, it's my version." And you know, if you don't push yourself, you know, you just end up sitting in a trailer on some godforsaken, horrible cop series or something with your four lines, going, "What the fuck am I doing here?" You know, you may as well push yourself and try and test yourself for as long as you've got the energy to do so, I think.